You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Taylor! Why did you run away?
Security police.
I'm in charge of this man.
No longer, madam. He is now in custody of the Ministry of Science.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 142 for the 6th of August, 2011. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. Over here on the other side of the table.
Way over there.
Works well.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yes, I like this.
And that other voice you're hearing, of course, is Richard Gray, rejoining us again from TheRealBits.com. Richard, before we go any further, I just want to commend you on a sensational written review for Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Thank you very much.
And if anybody wants to go read that, shoot over to TheRealBits.com. It is actually a fine piece of writing.
Thank you.
I really, really, really enjoyed it. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. And this week we are joined, as I said, by Richard Gray, because we are going to review a film that we have all seen. We all saw it about a week ago, and we all have our opinions of it, which I won't spoil just at this point. And that a film is, of course, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I think it was once referred to as the sequel that nobody wanted. Comes this film. So I just thought it's very interesting because the buzz for this film is actually incredibly low. And so we'll have a talk about that when we get to it. We've got a little bit of film news, including some late-breaking stuff that literally happened this morning. It wasn't in the original show notes, but I will incorporate it into the show notes. And we also have some new trailers. One of them is a late-breaking trailer, which isn't in the show notes, but that, of course, is Roland Emmerich's new film, Anonymous, has picked up a second trailer. And I got to say, I'm really actually very interested in this movie. And I can't remember the last time I actually thought that about a Roland Emmerich film where I went, I really, really want to see this.
It's a change of pace for you.
It is, very much so.
Yet not at the same time, if you see the full trailer where it's got like epic battlefields.
Yeah, but he's not destroying the world. I think it's the point that we're trying to make.
He's downsized a little bit.
He's just having a riot in London instead.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
We also have the trailer for the new George Lucas-produced film Red Tails, which is the
Red Tails.
This is the film that he's been trying to get produced for quite some time. This is about the Tuskegee Airmen. And if anybody's seen the television movie that was made on this about 10 years ago, it was a really good telemovie. It's a really fantastic story about the first black air battalion in 1944, who basically were thought of as a joke and then turned out to be these real heroes of the war because they were really good pilots. He's made a big screen, big budget version of this, and ILM's effects work is phenomenal. I mean, it's just amazing to look at the aerial stuff. So we'll have a look at that trailer. And we've also got a new trailer from... Now, what's his name? It's gone out of my head. Why is his name gone out of my head? Come back. Come back. Gattaca director? Nichol. Whatever.
Yeah.
The guy who directed...
Andrew Nichol.
Thank you. God, it just went out of my head, like blank. He's got a new sci-fi film called In Time coming out, which looks really intriguing. And we've got the trailer for that as well. We also have a brand new list of five this week because of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. We thought perfect time to do five great animal movies.
And if you think you've got our picks picked... You're wrong.
You probably have mine. Mine are pretty standard.
You can think again.
But first, we have some feedback and a little bit of what we've been watching. We only have one feedback that we're going to read very quickly, and it's from our friend Mike from Canada. And Mike from Canada says, before I go on with this email, I probably should explain what this is about. Mike has volunteered to update the lists of five on the Facebook page. If you've noticed on the Facebook page, I haven't updated the lists of five for months because I just haven't had time. And I put out a call and said, anybody want to do this? Mike's taken it on, and he's basically completely updated. And if you go to the list now, you'll see they're all up to date. to the minute. And he's also decided to keep a spreadsheet for us, and he's going to notify us when we vault something.
I thought it was very interesting to find out we haven't actually vaulted.
And I did too. Yeah, he's
did not see that coming.
Neither did I. Apparently we haven't vaulted. We're close on a couple, but we haven't vaulted anything yet. So good. Open slather for this one. We'll see what happens. So yes, we will actually start doing the vault page and stuff because we're finally up to date on this. Anyway, so but then after doing all of that, he's been communicating with me through Facebook, but then he sent us an email in the feedback channels and said, "Hey, Dave and Josh, I'm done. Like the Firebush and Ten Commandments, your lists are done. I did, however, disagree with Josh's recommendation of A Scanner Darkly, so I just replaced all mentions of A Scanner Darkly with the far superior film Minority Report." Ciao for now, Mike from Canada.
I'll stab you.
And of course,
I will come to Canada and stab you.
And I said to Mike, I can't wait to read this email on the show because I wanted to see your face. Of course, he has not changed your recommendations.
You fucking day right, he hasn't.
For those who listen to this show often enough, you know that Josh doesn't actually like Minority Report very much. So I just thought that was very amusing. Thank you very much for doing all that work, Mike. You are a legend. Okay, what we've been watching this week. I just want to drop in really quickly. 2 weeks ago, I mentioned that Apocalypse Now on Blu-ray. And I said how good it looked and everything else, and here's the disc. This is the edition you want to buy, by the way. I think it's exclusive to JB Hi-Fi.
It is.
Yeah. The other version has the two versions of the movie and lots of special features. This also contains Heart of Darkness, which is the documentary.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
And it has so much printed material, including the original. When you saw Apocalypse Now at the cinema, I don't know how many people actually know this, but when you saw Apocalypse Now at the cinema in its first release, they had no end credits. What happened was when you walked into the cinema, every chair had a program on the chair which had all the credits. And so basically you had your take-home thing to go home with it. On the video release and all the subsequent pre-releases, they have that credit sequence at the end where you see the village being bombed and the credits roll. If on the DVD in the 79 version, you'll notice it's not there anymore. And in this version, they give you the little brochure that you used to get at the cinema. Yeah. So it's great. The reason why I brought this in and want to recommend this one more time is because I was watching one of the documentaries. I actually didn't know. I knew that its sound design was something special and everything else at the time. I remember that. But I did not know that this is actually the first film that was ever released in 5.1 stereo.
Really?
So this 5.1 was designed by Walter Mirsch for this film.
Wow.
Now, why I bring this up is because when you put this Blu-ray on, as soon as I heard that and was watching that, I thought, I must watch this again. And I fired up the 5.1 and turned it right up. It's a really, really amazing experience. The sound mix is so clear. Literally, I won't let my son watch the whole film because it is a bit rough for kids, but I did show him the helicopter attack, which is that really amazing moment. He's looking around the room as because the helicopters are literally everywhere in the room at all times. It is an amazing 5.1 experience. Get it on Blu-ray. Watch it in 5.1. That is just a bonus recommendation for you right there. What have we been watching, guys? Josh, we'll start with you.
What have I been watching? Well, this week I attempted to watch the original Grudge films, like the original
ones. Because you've been going through all of the old classic
Exactly.
Series.
And I'm still having the same experience. It's like when he got a bit more money behind him, you can see the differences. And you can see when one of our masters of horror sat down with him and went, "You've got a really effective concept, but you need to do this with it." It came out better. And it's like, I didn't actually make it through. I got like halfway through and I was like, I'm actually struggling with this. So didn't finish that. and that kind of sucked. Apart from that, I'm just trying to think of anything else. I'll jump in if I can think of anything.
I'll throw out next because you've got quite a bit to talk about.
I can. Yes.
Yeah, you can. Okay. now, there was a preview screening for a new film coming out. It's a new Irish film coming out. Now, I didn't actually get the screening details on this one. Richard told me about it literally on the day it was going to happen. So I wrote to them and said, can I invite myself to this because I didn't get this. And so at the very last minute, I managed to get a seat in the screening room to go see a film called The Guard, which is a little Irish film. And, you know, these sort of films, you sit there and go, is it going to be any good? Is it not going to be any good? And it was actually a really charming little film. And Brendan Gleeson is phenomenal. That's okay. Yeah, it's not coming out. We'll give a full review on it before it comes out. He's just pointing out to me that it doesn't come out until August.
No, I thought you were asking about the release date.
It's coming out in a couple of weeks. Yeah. So we will actually fully review this film because it deserves it. I just want everybody to know of its existence because I wasn't aware of its existence. And it's a charming little film that I really want to see again. It's one of those films where you sit there and go, there's so much happening in it, so much subtlety in this film. Basically about an Irish police officer, Brendan Gleeson, in this tiny, 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 tiny little town. I mean, we're talking about tiny town.
Population 10.
Population 10, basically. And really very Irish. Yeah. And the plot basically revolves around the fact that the FBI has sent a liaison to this town because there is going to be a drug deal going through this town. And a big drug deal going through this town. Mm. And basically they want the cooperation of Gleeson and his... But he is so amoral.
Mm. Yeah.
And he's so racist. And of course, the FBI agent they send out is Don Cheadle. And you can imagine there's fireworks there.
Oh, yes.
And I mean, the cast on this thing, one of the drug dealers, smugglers, whatever, is Mark Strong, you know. And it's just a terrific film. And he's just sitting there watching it. And it's very low key, very Irish. And it's just terrific. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I really want Josh to see it. And when it comes out, you and I are going to go see it again because I want to see it again.
Nice.
And we will review it on the show. But just be aware that the film is coming and everybody must see it. the other thing I want to talk about was I watched Daylight last night. the Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, I watch a film a day. I have to watch a film a day. And last night I felt like a junk title. And the first thing my son said, now Daylight is what, 99, 2000, somewhere okay, around there. Yeah, somewhere around there. First thing my son says, he goes, God, this is so 80s. And I went, yeah, it is. It really feels like an 80s film.
It was one of the last 80s films in my eyes. Like, I remember when that came out, I was like, huh. Well, that's...
this is a throwback.
Yeah. It was that, and what was the other one? Chain Reaction was another one that came out, yeah. And I was like, wow, this is just wrong generation, wrong time. But, you know.
But I have to say, I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. It was actually a lot of fun. I forgot how much fun that film was. It's stupid, but it's fun.
Absolutely.
It's one of those films where you sit there watching it going, yeah, Stallone's doing what Stallone does, and the rest of the cast are doing what the rest of the cast does, and it all just kind of works. And it was Rob Cohen, who went on to direct Fast and the Furious and had previously directed Dragon, the Bruce Lee story.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, yeah, it's actually not a bad little film. You know, it's for what it is, it's not a bad little film. So if you like kind of disaster porn, it's kind of what it is. You know, Roland Emmerich would have felt very at home directing this film. All right, Richard. Now, I believe you've been at MIFF, which sounds filthy, but
not as bad as MUFF, which is the Melbourne Underground Film Festival. I just came back from the Melbourne International.
Melbourne International Film Festival. We better clear that up.
So it's actually the 60th Melbourne International Film Festival this year. So nice big anniversary one. I went down there for about a week. I was a bit disappointed. There's a couple of ones I missed out on. Melancholia, which is the new Lars von Trier film.
I'm actually curious to see it. Once again, Lars von Trier does this to me every time I see these trailers and I go, I hate you, I hate everything you stand for. But God, I'm dangerously curious about seeing that film.
He's the kind of guy that puts no effort into what he does, but then you can sort of see him twirling a rubber band, coming up with great concepts, you know, and he's just like, guy goes over here and has a psychological trip out and figures out that he actually had sex with his mother 10 years ago. And you're like, it's an interesting premise. I'd be curious. Then you watch it and then wham, you're like, wow, I'm never watching a film.
We've just jumped on him, and I got to ask, what are your feelings on Lars von Trier?
Yeah, look, I have a love-hate relationship with Lars von Trier. I'm very similar to you, David. I kind of think that's it, you're never going to do it again. It's an abusive relationship. I'm not coming back again, and then each time it's like, damn, that looks good, though.
And what is it? Do you think that the film's trailer, well, is it what Josh says? Is it just the concepts are fascinating?
It's the concepts are fascinating. I think he does, when he's good, though, and we're talking things like Breaking the Waves, we're talking elements of Dancer in the Dark.
Elements. Let's be very clear about elements.
Elements of Dancer in the Dark. You know, some of his other work, I mean, particularly Breaking the Waves, which I think is probably the best thing.
It's a painfully depressing film.
It's a painfully depressing film, but it's probably the best thing he's ever made. Things like that, you kind of think he's got in him. And Dogville actually really surprised me how pretentious it was. That didn't surprise me, but how good it was despite that conceit that's at the heart of it. And his long miniseries, The Kingdom, if you've ever seen that, which was readapted as Kingdom Hospital for the American audience.
I didn't know that was his.
Yeah, he did Kingdom,
I've only seen Kingdom Hospital.
Yeah, and Kingdom is the original Danish version that's it's based on, and it's, oh, fuck, it's good. Like, it's really,
I actually did not
really
know that
good.
Was Lars von Trier. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, so that's, and it was made for television, and it was released overseas as two two-part things, and they were both you know, a couple of hours long.
There are two directors I feel this way about. Mm. Lars von Trier is one and Peter Greenaway is the other. Mm. And I sit there and I keep getting sucked into these people because I sit there and go, it's such an interesting idea, it's such an interesting concept, whatever. And then Peter Greenaway is worse, though, because I don't think I've actually really enjoyed any Peter Greenaway films. I think they look beautiful. You know, he's sumptuous to look at, but I don't like his style. I don't like his storytelling. I don't like...
No, I went through this period where I watched a whole lot of Peter Greenaway films and hated myself for it.
Yeah, I felt dirty afterwards.
Exactly, that's exactly what I was going to say. I felt dirty at the end of it. Anyway, I didn't see Lars von Trier while I was down there because they played him at the very start and at the very end of the festival, and I was down there for the middle.
But I missed it. Did you actually see the film?
No, I didn't. That's the thing. So I'm saying that was the big one that was playing that I missed, so I didn't get to see that. And I also didn't get to see the amazing-looking Drive by, I've always mispronounced his name, which is Nicholas Winding Refn, who did... I've forgotten his last
name. This is the one with
Rising.
He did the Pusher series.
The one with Gosling in it.
This has got Ryan Gosling in it. It looks like all the best bits from The Transporter.
So excited.
It's supposed to be great. Foster.
It looks amazing, but it's actually closing MIFF, so it was $80 to go and see that. So I'll wait till October when it comes out in Australia. Anyway, what I did see...
there may be something coming.
So my question
Sydney
is, you went to Melbourne,
that.
Did you actually see any films?
I saw... I ended up seeing about 11 or 12 films at the festival. I took it a little bit easier rather than seeing the 35 films that I saw at the Sydney Film Festival. I was still a little bit wiped from that. I saw one of the first films I saw, which was really good, was a documentary called Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Now, for anybody, those of us who are a bit artistic in our leanings...
Well, that counts me out.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, anybody who does anything, you know, whether it's podcasting, whether it's writing, whether it's a bit of art, whether in his case it's making sushi. His philosophy is basically you have to give it everything you've got, otherwise it's not worth doing. And if you don't do that, you're not being honest to yourself, not being honest to the craft, and you're not being you're not giving either of those things a good go. This is a man who's 85. He has his restaurant is basically a bench with five chairs, and it starts at $300 a plate. He's the only sort of basic. Almost sushi counter place that's got three Michelin stars, and he's just this amazing philosophy and this weird this relationship with his children. His son he's 85. His son's 50,
right?
And his son who's 50 doesn't know if he'll ever take over the store, you know. So there's that. It's just an amazing documentary. It's really inspirational.
I do like a good documentary.
That was really good.
Even I wanted to see that one.
The other good documentary was one called Tatsumi. Which is not actually it's a documentary, but it's not. There's a Japanese manga artist named Tatsumi who was very influenced. He sort of came up around the same time as Tezuka, Osamu Tezuka, who of course did Astro Boy and what have you. But he was sort of largely responsible for this is Tatsumi. For inventing the, or not inventing, but developing the genre, the more adult manga genre.
Yeah.
And he did so by writing a lot about his stories in the aftermath of the Second World War
and
the horror stories. And he wrote a lot of, and what the documentary actually does, he also wrote this like 800-page autobiographical manga called, I think it's called Drifting Life, something along those lines. And he wrote this thing, and it's basically partly an adaptation of that, but also an adaptation of five of his stories done in this stylized manga anime form.
Oh, okay.
And it's just amazing to watch because it's not your traditional autobiography, but if you like manga and you like anime, you're going to love it.
So even though it's not in the anime style, the documentary is still kind of in the style of Waltz for Bashir.
It's not even it's kind of like that, but it's not even a documentary per se. It's more of a autobiographical novel brought to life through his kind of...
Well, that's kind of what Waltz with Bashir is like as well. It's just kind of telling his story.
It is a lot like Waltz with Bashir in a lot of ways, but it's something else entirely. So I thought it was pretty special. Mm. Just a couple of quick other ones. Everyone knows I love Japanese films. I spoke a few weeks ago about the batshit crazy Shon Sono, who did Cold Fish. I spoke about then. He's brand new one. It's not even out in Japan yet, called Guilty... of Romance is probably his response to accusation of misogyny. I'm not going to give anything away about it. It involves prostitution. It involves serial murder. It involves a hell of a lot of breasts.
I'm there.
It's again, the only words I can use to describe this man are batshit crazy, but it is also brilliant. You'll either love it or you'll hate it. And that's all I'll say, because there's a bunch of other ones I saw, including one called End of Animal, which is a Korean film. About a sort of a very minimalist apocalyptic film. Anyway,
you don't really equate apocalyptic films with Korean cinema.
No, and look, it's this is why it took me by surprise. It starts out of a bit of a mystery, and it sort of unfolds into something where you think you know the answer, but you're not entirely sure.
Octane's asking, so it's a family film then?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, actually...
Family friendly.
Actually, Octane, you're not far wrong. There is a family element to it.
I don't think it's that. What is it? Incest. Again, the whole family can play.
So there you go. That was my week.
Fantastic. We have a voicemail as well. Now... This voicemail took us off guard because I don't think we quite understand the question, but we'll play it because it is from our very good friend, Charlie, over at Rebound Radio. And this is coming live off the Skype, guys, so bear with me here. Let's see if this works.
This is for Film Actually, and this is Charlie Gonzalez from the Rebound Radio Network. I was just calling to say hi to you guys and thank you all for always promoting our stuff, but also to pose a simple question that was posed to me tonight. If you had to pick between a race, and I know my friend Josh over there will be very interested in this, of alien that you think is superior in some way or shape or form, this could be narratively or fundamentally or creatively, Predator or Alien, please decide for me. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, guys, and I hope you all keep doing your show. It's great. I love it, and I can't wait to talk to you guys next time. Bye.
Okay, well, I got it.
Thank you very much, Charlie. Okay, please explain.
Okay, I got it, because I sat down and actually wrote down the words as he was going along. He's very, in a very long, strung-out way, basically asking, if we had to pick out of the two obviously superior races, aliens or predators, which would we pick?
Right. Superior to us? Oh, us.
Yeah,
okay.
Us. So in other words, what are we thinking? Let me ask you the question.
I have a question for Charlie, first of all. Charlie, have you been drinking?
Yeah, possibly. Now, the question is basically alien or predator.
I would say alien.
Richard, that's your cue.
no, I'd go alien because they're cool.
You were expecting me to explain, weren't you?
No, I think predator because I think on some level you can probably reason with the predators if you had to.
No, this is why I think aliens are superior because they are.
Which one's superior?
Yeah, they're cockroaches of the galaxy.
Oh, sorry, alien. Then.
Yeah, alien. I mean, basically they'll impregnate anything they come in contact with. They're pure killing machines. Even their blood kills. Mm. You know, and they will continue to propagate around.
Totally disagree. Totally disagree.
Hit us with it.
Predator because of the simple reason that predators have managed to keep these things almost under wraps for that fucking long, they are like the humans to the cockroaches. I'm sorry, these guys have been destroying these races and then letting them out on planets to hunt them. I'm sorry, but that's obviously the superior race.
Okay, but are we talking about extended universe or the movies? Because in the movies, we're not seeing that.
No, we are. In Alien versus Predators, that's all about that. No,
well,
I'm sorry.
I just ignore the Alien
in canon,
yeah, so do I.
In canon, totally acceptable answer, no. And I'm sorry that they are obviously the most superior one because they will blow up a motherfucking planet if they have to get rid of these things. They will just be like, nah, they got out of hand again. Boom, let off the fucking roach bomb. Planet extinguished, and they move on because that's how tough they are. So there you go. Predator answered question.
Okay, he says predator. I say alien. Richard says.
I'll say predalien.
Predalien.
Snap.
There you go.
I can't beat him on that.
Okay, Charlie, thank you very much for your question. That was probably the geekiest thing we've ever done on Film Actually.
You know what? And I'm cool with that.
I'm cool with that.
Well chosen question, badly worded question.
Yeah. Before delivering that question, don't drink a beer.
No. David, before you said it goes around the galaxy impregnating anything and its blood is toxic, yeah. Delta Knight says, so Charlie Sheen then.
Snap.
And the winner of best Ultra's comment Charlie of the Sheen, night man. Goes to...
Delta, you rock. And on that note, let's go into our feature film review. All right, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, directed by Rupert Wyatt and written by Rick Jaffa. Isn't a Jaffa a little orange-flavored chocolate?
It is. You roll them down the cinema aisles.
All right, Rupert Wyatt and written by Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver, suggested by the novel by Pierre Boulez, And I can't never pronounce the name of the novel. What's the name of the novel?
I actually don't even know what the novel is. I've only ever read it.
I had it reprint. Actually written down. I went, I can't pronounce it, so I'm not putting it in.
I've only ever read it as the reprint, which was reprinted as Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it's got a big long French title. But yeah, just look for the novel by Pierre Boulez about apes.
Incidentally, wrote Bridge on the River Kwai.
I did not know that.
Well, yeah.
There you go. The film stars James Franco, Frida Pinto, John Lithgow, Brian Cox, Tom Felton. Now, here's a good one for us. I always mangle names. I apologize to this man in advance. It's David Oyelowo, I think it is. And that's what I'm going with, all right?
Yeah.
And Andy Serkis as Caesar. We'll talk about that in the review. Set in modern-day San Francisco, the film tells the backstory of the classic series of films, a breakthrough drug to combat and cure Alzheimer's diseases tested on apes and leads to increased intelligence. Caesar is the last of the test subjects. Caesar, the last of the test subjects, is raised in secret, but when he is forcefully put into an ape sanctuary, he begins.
His shit goes down.
He begins the revolution. And here's the trailer. So have a look at this trailer, and we'll come back and talk about this.
We're talking about huge potential for millions of people. Our therapy enables the brain to repair itself.
We call it
the cure.
I want you to start testing on chimps. ASAP.
We test one subject. I want to make sure it's stable. I designed the 112 for repair, but Caesar's gone way beyond that.
You mean increased intelligence?
The skills that far exceed that of a human counterpart.
This is wrong, Will.
It works.
And what about Caesar? Where does he fit in?
That chimp's company property.
He hasn't spent any time with other chimps.
They're not people, you know.
Are you trying to control things that are not meant to be controlled?
Contaminated. Put those apes down.
You have no idea what you're dealing with.
Okay, who wants to start us off? Okay, Richard. We've just had a comment. Richard's answered it in the chat room, but I'll just make it public because we should actually always remind people that if you do want to call in, our phone number is 02-801-13167. But please hold your calls until after the review because affect our flow. So in the news section, you're welcome to call in. If you don't want to call a Sydney number, if you're outside of the state or something, you can just use Skype ID Geek, actually. That is also the same phone number and ID if you want to leave us voicemails when we're not on the air. Okay, now, with that being said, who wants to get us started?
Look, why not? I'll do it. Because it's a very rare occurrence. Very rare occurrence that I'm usually the nice one on the show.
I think we're all nice ones on the show this week. So. Yeah.
Look, this film is the perfection of two crafts in one go, which is that Weta has accomplished the best CG that they have put out so far.
Agreed.
It is the most incredible movie to watch, and as Richard said, I didn't even consider that these were CG at all. It's not even a question. It is so...
No, actually, you spend the first 5 minutes of the film going, wow, that's great CG, and then you forget it's CG.
It didn't even enter into my mind. I was going to watch a film about apes, and there was an ape on screen, and it's like watching an animated movie. It's like, I don't immediately go, oh, well, these are animated apes. It's like it was just there, and it was part of the film, and it was nothing stood out. There was no edging problems. There was no obvious interaction, if you know, sort of interaction issues with the with the, you know, sort of CG work or anything like that. But the second craft that's been perfected is Andy Serkis has done the best job of bringing a non-real element to a film and making it emotionally challenging to watch. Like, this film, you are along for the ride the whole time, and Caesar is the star.
Yeah.
James Franco, all these people are back elements. We have a creature on screen that is the main character of a film that is completely and utterly believable.
Absolutely.
And it's just an amazing achievement to do that. And before we even start the review, I just want people to know this. You go into this film, and even if you don't enjoy the storyline, God knows why you wouldn't, but if you didn't, the reason to go see this film is just see the perfection of what will be digital art.
We are actually having a call come in, even though I said don't call during the review. Let's find out who this person is. Hi, this is David from Geek Actually. Who's this?
Hi, this is David from Geek Action. Who's
this? This is us, man.
Who's this?
Hey, what's going on, Dave? This is us, man.
Sorry, we got
David. How are you?
I'm good. Who is this?
This is Kurt from the Unrecognized Geniuses. We do a podcast, like, we're actually from America, and so we're pissed right now, by the way.
So you're calling our show to promote your show. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. Well, we're not on air anymore. We're actually just off air looking for shows to call.
Yeah, but we are on air, and we're in the middle of a review, dude.
That's all right. Hey, that's all right. We get chime in, too.
Yeah, because we actually talked about Planet of the Apes not too long ago on our show.
Very quickly, because we got to move on. What was your opinion on Planet of the Apes?
Oh, we haven't seen the film yet, so we can't have an opinion, David. Come on, man.
All right, man.
All right, we'll let you go. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for calling.
All right, David.
Bye now. All right, thank you for calling. All right.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, that was always. It looks always fun to get a crank call while you're doing a live show. It's what we do. It's what we do.
Absolutely. look, I mean, one of the big things about the film is that the source material is so strong, and that's one of the things that I love about this. It's like it's a tale which is kind of like when you strip away the monkeys and all that sort of stuff. It's a thing of oppression and rebellion. That's essentially the concept behind the film, and it works so well because of the fact that because you have these strong grounded characters and you have performances that even John Lithgow, who we talked about when we saw the preview, which we had kind of judged him for.
Well, we'd actually said he was the weakest thing in the footage we had seen.
Exactly, but I actually found that when you actually see the progression of his character's sort of demise mentally, it actually seems a lot less cartoonish.
Agreed.
And it's like when you get to the stage that you start noticing him go from strength to weakness and strength to weakness, it's like you delve into the character. And this is what I loved, is that no one in this film sort of, like, everybody seemed to be very aware that this film was a really powerful thing, and everyone was on a game for acting. Yeah. And
it's fair to say that if your experiences with Planet of the Apes are the original Planet of the Apes, or even Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes, this is a very different film.
No, and the thing that I love about it is the original ones can be considered camp because of the fact that, you know, we've got old makeup and old design and stuff like that, and they tried to tell a good story, but they were still kind of failed, in my opinion. It's like, I love these films, right?
I really love the Charlton Heston, the first Planet of the Apes. I think the rest of the Planet of the Apes films, the original five movies, they get relatively more stupid as the films go on.
Absolutely. But even the first film has a level of campness, and also we were still learning film at this stage, and it's like there are a lot of errors and a lot of silly things about the film where I'm like, I'm very aware I'm watching a whole bunch of people wearing, you know, fake, you know, monkey masks and so on and so forth. You watch this one, and this is truly what they were trying to get when they wrote the books. You know what I mean? Like, the source material, you never get a feeling of campness. It's never stupid or over the top. There's no unnecessary jokes like there are in Tim Burton's ones, or just silly stuff because he's obsessed with having zaniness in his films. This is truly a film that you can look at this and be interested in both the apes themselves, because at this stage they don't look like people in stupid makeup. And this was what bothered me about Tim Burton's ones. We stepped forward, progressively we had better technology than we ever had, and you decided to keep the stupid look of the apes? Like,
I actually disagree with you, because I think the Tim Burton's makeup, the makeup work by Rick Baker in Tim Burton's film is exceptional, and it really worked well. And he was trying to make a remake of Planet of the Apes, so he's going for that look, the humanoid planet, the humanoid apes.
If he was trying to create that, then why in God's name did he have to make them look like that?
Because that's what he was going for. And the thing is, had that film been really successful, we probably would have seen a whole series of ape films like that.
Yes, but it had Mark Wahlberg in it.
Absolutely, and Mark Wahlberg was terrible.
Oh, and Heather Monicata, who's in everything.
Yeah, but I actually thought she was quite good in that film. There are many elements to Tim Burton's apes that actually do work, and there are some good points. I think... I love him. You know who I love.
Tim Roth?
No. Giamatti. Yeah. Paul Giamatti was terrific in that film as the orangutan slave dealer. You know, and there's great moments in that film. The problem is overall, it just doesn't work. And it was a failed experiment. Yeah. It was very expensive.
I walked out on that film.
See, I didn't. I sat there through it. It had moments that I actually sat there and went, okay, I can see what he's doing here. I didn't like his basic setup to the film.
And the story as well. It just...
And so what?
And this is what I'm saying. Yeah, it had a few moments, but like when you look at them compared to the original,
I actually just watched it again the other night. It's really interesting because I watched it with my son. He watched the original Charlton Heston one. After we saw the 20 minutes from this film, actually, he said he'd never seen an ape film. So we went home and we watched Charlton Heston. And he liked that. And then he watched the Tim Burton one. And funnily enough, to a 12-year-old, he actually preferred the story to Tim Burton's. He said he hated the ending, the whole, you know, trying to up the Statue of Liberty. You just don't try and up the Statue of Liberty. But he said that he actually preferred the idea that it was because of his coming there that caused the cause and effect of...
I like that, too, apes. Because I like a good time travel.
Yeah, and he really liked that notion of the film. And he said there was many aspects of the remake he liked better than the original, just because of the way it was put together and so on. Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, he's 12, and you know...
Absolutely,
and
different era.
Yeah, it's very different eras. And, you know, he looks at the original 1968, I think it is, Planet of the Apes. And he looks at that and he goes, you know, their mouths don't move properly and, you know, stuff like that. And it's kind of slow moving for his age group. So I can understand that the Tim Burton one would hold an appeal to him. He is dying to see this film. He saw the 20 minutes with us and he was just mesmerized by it, you know? And this film goes in a place which none of the previous Planet of the Apes goes, which is it takes it into a very realistic world. It takes it into a very plausible world.
It's Dark Knighted what we did with comic books. It's turned around and it's gone, if we're going to sell this, we need to abandon all of the, and again, I'm sorry, this is only my personal opinion, all of the crap that's in this film and make it a realistic, grounded concept on what this sort of a situation would start. And again, I mean, whether or not it hits, the thing that I love is it still remains in canon, even though it's a very different kind of film. They don't have the stand uprightness. There's none of this human-esque monkiness or anything like that.
But you're starting to get elements of that.
You started to get it. So it fits within the canon of the film.
It actually fits within. It fits within. You could very easily call this a prequel to the original Charlton Heston film.
Yes.
This bears no relation to the Tim Burton film at all. So just
thank God.
We'll just shake that off completely and say that this is a rare occasion, and I actually said this in my review, and I cannot believe I'm actually going to say this, but I am now actually looking forward to the remake of the 1968 film, because we need that now to follow this one. You know, we can now remake the 1968 film to follow this film along the same path. We've already put seeds of that into this film with little Easter eggs all the way through it. You know, there are Easter eggs all the way through this film. If you watch this film, we're not going to spoil them, but I'll give you one idea of what you're looking for. The name of Tom Felton's character is a combined name of the two other astronauts from Charlton Heston's ship. So his name is the other two astronauts' names as one name.
Nice.
So it's little Easter eggs like that all the way through. The names of the chimps.
It's made
and so
with
forth.
So much love towards the stuff. And like you, I'm incredibly interested to see where they go with this.
I want Rupert Wyatt, the director, to actually handle it. I want the same writers to come on, and I want them to remake.
And I want Wetter, and I want Andy Serkis.
Absolutely, without doubt. There's no doubt
this
in my mind.
This is the film in my mind. But this is what I'm saying. It's like, this is why in this modern age with these really good directors that are starting to come up with an understanding of new technology and an understanding of how to better ground stories that we loved as kids and create a story which isn't just trying to make it the same but make it different and trying to make everybody happy or whatever, just going their own direction, you know, The Dark Knight, whatever you want to call them, these sort of films, and just taking the source material and making something which is so unique and so much better. This is why I'm actually – this film is one of the reasons why I'm really excited about the Thing prequel. Because it's like we're at the stage. We have people out there which are capable of making something which is not only true to the original material but then also able to create a story which is unique and different. And this is the sort of thing. It's like this is what helps me to believe that we're not just going to end up with 1,010 Texas Chainsaw Massacre remakes and Jason remakes and stuff like this where people just try and up the stakes. It's possible to make a film which fits within the canon of what we've already had and yet still does huge amounts of justice. And that's why I love this film. It's like, I don't even care about the ending that everybody seems to be complaining about because it ends and they're like, oh, it could have ended on a better note. No, it couldn't because it becomes, as Dave put when we walked out of the cinema, it becomes a different film if you go any further.
And, like, also with the end credit animated sequence, which you have to stay for the credits here.
Yeah.
If you actually stay for those credits, it actually gives weight to where it ends.
Yeah.
And we won't say what it is. Richard, we haven't heard from you. Chime in.
Go.
Yeah, well, I quite like the film.
Before we go any further, is your site down?
My site seems to be down at the moment. I can't seem to get it up. I was going to bring up my review so I could pull out a few notes from it, but I don't know what's going on there. So
you
damn
don't
you.
Go through Site 5.
Sorry?
You don't go through Site 5.
I guess not.
That's very interesting. We'll have to look into this after the show. All right, tell us what
anyway, yeah, so but basically I enjoyed the film immensely. I'm a huge fan of the original series, of course. I went through a period in my teens where I just went through every Charlton Heston sci-fi film, including, of course, Soylent Green and The Omega Man, but Planet of the Apes was the one that stood out for me. I actually really enjoy the whole series. I enjoyed the whole series. I enjoyed the TV series spin-off that came as a result of that.
The animated series.
And look, even though I think the weakest one of the whole original five is the second one because they tried to build on from that big ending of...
Look, Beneath the Planet of the Apes is a terrible...
It's a terrible film, but it did give us Planet of the Apes. It did give us the third one, which eventually led into the Caesar-led revolution that we see in the fourth and fifth
films. The
closest
relation this has to the original series is Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, which is number four. So
you've got that. They've kept the name, which was actually my favourite bit, but it always felt like really low budget. It was like all those Doctor Who episodes where there was a Dalek invasion force and invasion force, a Dalek invasion force of Earth, where invasion force meant five and... Dalek Invasion Force meant five, and Earth meant some quarry in the middle of the home counties of the UK. And that's what the Conquest is like. They really ran out of budgets. And if you get the original DVDs of those films that came out, there's some really excellent documentaries about all the budgetary problems that they had on those. So this is kind of giving us a glimpse of what they could have done had they had a massive budget and today's technology. And as Josh has already said, these are people who have an innate understanding of technology and how it works and how it fits together in a modern concept and also a really good story. And one of the things I said in my review on the site is it's a really good story because it's based partly on the original novel, of course. It's inspired by the original film, which, as David pointed out...
It actually does say in the credits that it's inspired by the Pierre Boulez novel. So they've taken the ideas there and they've run with it.
Well, the novel's very different. The novel is very much the original 1968 film, with the exception of the ending, which is actually closer to Tim Burton's ending. It's quite funny because you find out... I don't know whether I should spoil the ending of the novel or not.
I'll hold off
on that. But there is a... it is a very clever ending and it's told from a different perspective to the films. But what I loved about this film is that, as Josh has already pointed out, it's got this amazing heart to it. It's got these great characters and it's kind of like they've... And the really amazing thing was that they... In the other films, we had to have a human lead because that's what would make us relate to it.
That's right.
Here... they've taken a human story. They've basically taken the biblical Moses story in that there is a slave child who was brought home to the oppressor's home, raised as one of the oppressors, and then eventually returns to his people to lead them across the ocean. And if you've seen the trailer at the top of this, you would have known, you know, there's a spectacular, absolutely spectacular sequence on the Golden Gate Bridge to the Promised Land. And in this case, it's these redwood trees. Now, it's the Moses story right down to it's you know, to make the Charlton Heston connection.
Yep.
Who was in Planet of the Apes and the Ten Commandments. So obviously, yep, someone's mashed those two up in their minds. But it does it so well. It's taken the framework of that, but it doesn't preach to you, so it's not trying to be, you know, a religious, you know, revelation or anything. It just uses that as the basis of good storytelling to showcase what special effects, the marriage of special effects and storytelling, can actually be, which is a bloody great movie that doesn't use 3D.
Thank God.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when I was watching it...
Sorry to Sean Lindsay, but this film, if it was in 3D, would have been a whole very different experience.
You know what, I was thinking 3D does two things. When it's done really well, it immerses you into it completely. And I'm thinking the Pixar films or any of the anime. I think Kung Fu Panda 2 in 3D was amazing.
Yeah.
So animated films works really well. It actually immerses you into the world. When it's done wrong, there's a barrier between you and the film. And it could be the fact that you're wearing glasses.
Yeah.
But there's a barrier between you and the film. The fact that this film was so reliant on characterization meant that if you'd had that 3D in there, it would have taken me a step back. And maybe I wouldn't have bought the fact that there's this ape, there's an ape interacting with humans at the start of it. So I just think that was an amazing achievement technically.
And I have to say, though, the ape does talk, though. He talks with his eyes. I mean, he talks with his emotions.
Actually, and this is what I was going to get to. The reason
this monkey is thinking.
Exactly. You know? The reason that it doesn't preach to you at all in any way or form is because when you're actually watching the film, there's just those few moments, the few eye looks that he'll give, which are obviously, it's heartbreaking to him to have to turn on these people.
Yeah. Like,
he doesn't want to. He's only doing it because he has no other choice.
And you see it in the trailer, and we saw it in that clip as well. That scene where the apes are coming out, and he's inspecting them as they come out, and he's like holding their chins and looking at them,
then
tapping them on, and these looks in his face is the recognition of what's going on.
Exactly.
You sit there and go, "That's just extraordinary that that's a CG creature." You know,
watched we're talking about festivals before. During, and it played at MIFF, and it also played at the Sydney Film Festival, a documentary called Project Nim. Which was about this project in the I think it was the late 70s and early 80s, about these people who basically tried to teach this chimp, Nim, to communicate with sign language.
All I can think of is Congo. Amy.
And look, you know, if you look this up, if you search Project
Bad Gorilla,
Nim, Bad Gorilla. Well, they actually managed to teach him a whole lot of communication, and there was this sense that, you know, if the ape had been hardwired in a different way, that it could have actually carried out full sentences. Now, a lot of things happened to this ape, and Project M's a heartbreaking story, but it kind of is a little bit spooky because it is, you do see a chimpanzee in this case interacting with humans on a level that you'd not really seen animals interact before. But there's also this very aggressive element to it, and they keep talking about that all throughout this documentary, which is, you know, sure, it's acting like a human, but at the end of the day, it's a chimpanzee. And this is one of those great warning shots kind of things that these films are great, because it's kind of like, you know, when animals attack kind of thing. Yeah, it's like, you know, let's not forget that at the end of the day, we might think that they're nice domestic creatures, but it's like Siegfried and Roy when the tiger attacks.
Well, there's a line in this film where she actually says, you know, he will reach a certain age where he is no longer safe to have as a pet.
Yeah.
Because he will become a wild creature.
Because,
you know,
chimpanzees are very territorial and incredibly aggressive.
Mm.
And adolescent chimpanzees will rip your throat out if they think you're a threat to their environment. What they've done here is nothing short of groundbreaking.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it should also be noted, just on a technical level, the reason why the CG is so good in this film is that Letaria was actually telling us at that 20-minute thing that Weta, who are at the forefront of motion capture, Avatar and Lord of the Rings with Gollum, and now, of course, with Tintin coming out. And by the way, the footage from Tintin that people saw at Comic-Con is nothing like the trailer. They're saying it is amazing.
Right.
So we wait to see that. And after seeing Planet of the Apes, quite frankly, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt that they're going to bring life to Tintin. But Letaria was actually saying that they did something different this time. Normally with motion capture, they shoot the scenes, then they go into a motion capture stage and the actor plays out the scene. In this particular case, they actually designed mobile motion capture rigs, which they could take out on location, set up around the location, and actually have Andy Serkis on location at the time that they captured the film and get the motion capture data directly with that interaction happening. Mm-hmm. And that is the key here, I think.
There's one sequence where Caesar is defending John Lithgow's character. And like you see elements of this in the trailer, and we saw this is one of the first scenes we saw a few months ago.
Oh, the scene is actually up on geekactually.com.
The scene's up there, and it's the scene, you've probably all seen it, and if you've seen the film by now, you've definitely seen it, where Caesar's swinging from tree to tree and leaping out from behind cars and things and attacking character. And then at the very end of that scene, there's complete reversal where he hugs John Lithgow's character. And it's got absolutely everything that you couldn't capture in any other way except with these mobile
Because it is actually Andy Serkis hugging John Lithgow, you know? And so you had that weight to it.
But it's still a mystery, even with the mobile cameras, how they managed to get such movement out of trees. I mean, they must have had sensors.
Well, I would say that it's actually a combination. He's probably acting at key areas, and then the rest of it is animated around him.
But that animation, they blend that animation.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And the actual mocap.
I cannot
mocap
wait
stuff
for the behind the scenes on this film.
Me, absolutely. Oh, the day the Blu-ray comes out.
Yeah, and look.
So don't stuff this one up, Fox. Put a good Blu-ray.
Blu-ray on this one.
And the other scene, which I won't wreck in any way or form, but the scene that you've got the picture of up here, where the rebellion kind of begins, and there is a very surprising moment that none of us saw coming, and the cinema went quiet.
Ape. They went ape.
No, just quiet. Like, not a word was spoken. It went deathly cold, like, for a moment, because when you looked at it, you were just
stunned.
Like, you are stunned to see what happens at that moment, and you're just like, holy shit.
It's funny because it comes
I did
on,
not see that coming.
It comes on the back of a nice little callback to the original film.
Exactly.
And which sends
which
everyone
worked so well. Which, that could have been so camp.
And everyone's, you know, calling out. People are going ape over that. And then you're right. This other moment turns immediately afterwards and you go, holy shit.
It's kind of interesting because it's like until that line of dialogue is uttered and everybody has a small giggle, you don't really realize how much like kind of the Charlton Heston esque character he has no respect for them, he has no, you know, and it's that thing, it's like until you get to that moment you're like, oh yeah, right, I see it now, because it was nice to see the kid that plays was Draco Malfoy. Actually, you know, a slightly taller and a lot more annoying but at the same time he definitely suited the roles, and it was nice to see him pick something like this because he definitely gets a mark in the right direction for his future career if this is where he's heading.
I'm gonna start us off because we gotta wrap this up, and I'm gonna say that I highly recommend this film. I think that this is the film that everybody wants to go see as soon as you're ready to go to movies next. This is your next film. If you like dramas, this has got that in it. If you like action film, this has got that in it. If you want heart-wrenching, soul-searching, philosophical ideas, this has got this in it. You know, this film has got everything going for it, and I was so surprised. I thought, okay, it's going to be an ape film. It's going to be fun, blah, blah, blah. I was so surprised by this film. It is actually the surprise of the movie going summer, American summer this year. I read somewhere that actually said this is kind of like the most unwanted film of the year. Everybody kind of went, why? You know? And now that it's come out, we go, damn straight, we did want this film, and thank God it was made, you know? Yeah. So I'm going to say highly recommended. Richard?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's probably, I'm not going to repeat my comments from Super 8, which was easily the best of the year, but if Fox wants to use it on their poster, absolutely go ahead.
No. How about I say it? That way I get on the poster. Okay. Easily the best of the year.
There
Fox.
You go. I think it's two to four. No, it's. No,
just had to up me again.
No, it really is, I think, a must see. Regardless of what your bag is, just go and see it. You'll be impressed. Special effects, acting.
Yeah, and the humans aren't bad either.
The humans are pretty good. Yeah. No, just see this film because you deserve it.
Yeah.
I believe in you.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you see one film this year, see this film.
You're not getting out enough.
And if you see two films this year, see it twice.
Yeah. No, like I actually mean that. If you see one film this year, watch this, because, you know, all these comic movies aside, they're just fun Hollywood blockbusters, and that's what they are. This film is a progressional step in filmmaking.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Done.
All right, done. Fantastic. All right, so everybody go out and see Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Show your love. make it a hit for Fox, because it really does deserve it. Let's move on to some entertainment news. How late are we? How long have we been going here? We're really late. Okay, let's move through this pretty fast. This week, first and foremost, let's look at this trailer. Because I got to get your opinions on this, because I haven't spoken to either of you about this.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, you haven't watched it? Okay, here we go. This is the new George Lucas produced film. He didn't direct it. All right? He produced it. It's about the Tuskegee Airmen. It's called Red Tails, and it's about a all-black squadron during World War II and their story.
New Zealand are all-blacks? Or?
No, actually African-American. Okay. All right, here they go. Red Tails.
Bandits! Hundreds of them! 6 o'clock!
It's got German markings.
Let's get them!
Where are the damn fighters going?
Is there anything left of our escort?
Mayday! Mayday! Prepare to bail out!
Our boys are getting cut to shreds.
I need pilots who will put the bombers ahead of themselves.
When we came under your command, Colonel, you stated very clearly that we would never find Negroes who could pass a pilot's exam, make it through flight school, survive basic combat.
We've done all of that.
I don't believe your boys have scored a single aerial kill.
It's damn hard to shoot down the enemy 100 miles behind the front lines.
What we do, how well we do it, does it matter?
And you all thought what?
You'd sign up, and that'd be the end of 100 years of bigotry. Get your head up, son. You're fighter pilots.
We have a right to fight for our country, the same as every other American. We will not go away.
I can't afford the kind of losses my bombers have been suffering. Can you help save lives?
If you get us new planes, we can help your boys.
Nothing's difficult.
Everything's a challenge.
Through adversity to the stars.
From the last plane to the last bullet to the last minute to the last man, we fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
At all costs, you protect the heavies.
Fighters, 4 o'clock, stay with the bombers.
One bomber, that's 10 men. We count our victories by the bombers we get to their targets. By the husbands we return to their wives. By the fathers we get back to their children.
Yes, sir!
Come on, Junior, bail!
I so want to see that film.
I think it's alright.
Yeah, it looks alright. Yeah, just alright. You know,
first time I've seen that Lucasfilm logo, and I got, actually, I've got a bit of a tingle. Rather than a sense of dread,
that is what Industrial Light and Magic does best. That is the 45 minutes of Pearl Harbor that actually matters. You know, it's like it's when they get into the hardware. When they get in, it's like with Avatar, they didn't do any of the creatures, but they did all the hardware aspect of it. You know, this is what they do best.
I want to see whether or not Cuba Gooding Jr. can actually pull off acting again.
It's been a while.
Oh,
yeah, snap.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, last film I think I saw him in that even dragged any emotion out of me was probably Man of Honor.
I was thinking Jerry Maguire, but this was not the point.
I was thinking Jerry Maguire.
Show me the money. I actually really want to see that. I think in the meantime, to tide us over to whet the appetite, so to speak, go out and find the TV movie that was made. I think it was 1999, 2000, something like that. Go find the TV movie. It's actually a very good TV movie. I know that Delta Knight put a comment up in the Facebook room that basically said that it was one of his favorite films, the original TV movie. So go and have a look at that, because it is well worth having a look at. This film doesn't come out for another, 5 months. So we've got a bit of waiting to do on this. Mm. But it is nice to see, because I've been hearing about this for almost a year. Mm. So it's nice to actually see some footage. And it's like, you actually have been doing something. Mm. And what footage? All right, moving along. If you remember going back a few months ago, we talked about the fact that there was a film called Inferno. It was about Linda Lovelace, and it was going to have, they were talking about having Lindsay Lohan in the role. And I said, this could be quite interesting, and blah, blah, blah. Then Lindsay Lohan got fired because they couldn't insure her. And the fate of Inferno is still going ahead. They're now talking about Malin Ackerman as Linda Lovelace in that one. A competing Lovelace film has now come up. Who knew Linda Lovelace's career was so amazing?
It's probably not. It's probably they've seen how many eyes are on the project, and they're just like, yeah, like.
So anyway, with this one's simply called Lovelace. And it's we have Olivia Wilde in serious contention to play Linda Lovelace in this film, and she's.
It would be nice to see her like really see if she could push her level of acting.
Well, the test is going to be Cowboys and Aliens, I reckon. So, so we'll see that on later
in
the week. And
that, from all accounts, dude, that's probably not the best thing to use as a marker.
You've been hearing the same reviews I
have. Oh yeah.
Yeah, Cowboys and Aliens. They're sounding like it's going to be the biggest disappointment of the year.
Look, I have a lot of friends that saw it this week for the viewing that I couldn't make it to. And let's just say the responses.
We're reviewing that next week, by the way, guys. So we'll talk about that next week.
It might be a good thing if.
Is it next week? No, Green Lantern's next week.
They're both coming up in the next week.
Oh, crap. How are we going to schedule that? We'll schedule that.
We'll figure something out.
What worries me is. Olivia Wilde is gorgeous. One,
I think so. My wife actually said, "Do you think she's pretty? I think she's kind of angular looking."
I think she's hot. I've got to say, I think she's hot. If you've seen Tron Legacy, of course, you know how hot she is.
The skin tight outfit helped.
Yeah, look, it did help a lot. But we've just seen another photo of her that proves it's not just the skin tight outfit.
That one?
That one. But the thing is, I've just lost my train of thought. The thing is, what worries me is...
I'm going to make you lose your train of thought a couple times in this. Yeah.
What worries me is that they're going to push you out and do a movie about a porn star without any actual nudity because she's a big star. Now, I really hope that they don't do
this. I think this is actually... Olivia Wilde has actually been photographed naked. She has done very skimpy stuff. And I think prerequisite of doing a Linda Lovelace film is that you're probably going to have to do nudity of some kind. Like... Julianne Moore did in Boogie Nights.
Absolutely.
It's not exploitive, but I think you can't do a film about a porn star without some kind of nudity.
If they do a Boogie Nights type film, then I'm all on board for this. Yeah. If they do like Movie of the Week, Linda Lovelace. Is it Linda Lovelace was the one?
You mean like those ETV specials?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of thing
Linda Lovelace, so you were about to ask her.
She was the hottest thing this
It's not even video, it's just pictures that scroll.
So I think there might be
motion. Everything went horribly wrong. Coming up next after the ad break.
Top 10 moments.
We watch far too much TV.
Absolutely. This is what happens when you get cable television. This one, you spend the whole thing on E. Coming up next, the top 10 20 child stars who have taken it up.
And there's like part of you leaning in the couch going, I've got to get up, but God damn, I really want to know 19? What's on that list.
I've actually stopped watching E because of that reason. Anyway, you were going to ask about Linda Lovelace?
Did she write? She was the one that wrote that tell-all biography, didn't she?
Yeah, she was the one that after doing, I think she only made two films or three films. She did Deep Throat, of course, which was famous. Mm. And then she did Linda Lovelace for President or something like that. Yeah. And then she basically turned her back on the industry saying that she was forced to do it. She was force-fed drugs and it was all very seedy and so forth. And she became a real women's advocate afterwards.
I think she's retracted that since, hasn't she?
Well, she's dead now, so she died. She died. A couple of years ago.
I had a feeling that she retracted some of that before she died.
Some, but not all. Yeah. So it's always been a very seedy story. The Linda Lovelace story, in particular, has been a very seedy story. Yeah. Look, it'd make a very good film. And I thought this was the film that would have turned Lindsay Lohan's career around had she been able to pull this off. Figuratively speaking, had she been able to get herself together enough to actually do this, this could have been the film to really... Because I've always said, I think Lindsay Lohan is actually a good actress who's just a screwed up person.
Absolutely.
You know? And I thought if she could have pulled herself together and actually done this role, it would have been daring, it would have been risky, and it would have been raw. Yeah. And she could have actually made herself into a superstar.
They've got very different looks, though, Lindsay Lohan.
Well, and the thing is, out of the two of them... she probably looks closest to Linda Lovelace was actually not a very attractive girl, but Linda Lovelace is a much chunkier girl than Olivia Wilde, and she had bigger boobs. So I don't know what they're going to do with Olivia Wilde in that sense. But I mean, you know, we're not looking for perfect. I mean, this is the Deep Throat girl. This is what she looked like at the time.
Wow.
So so it's going to be a very interesting. And there's Lindsay Lohan. So you can actually compare those two.
Yeah, I can see.
Yeah, I would have taken Lindsay Lohan over Olivia Wilde for this role. But anyway, Lindsay Lohan's out. The one I think is completely miscast is Malin Ackerman in Inferno. The question is, who's going to get to the box office first?
Mm. I'd like to think that Olivia Wilde has got the box office pull, so to speak, to do it.
Figuratively speaking,
yeah. Look, you know, I don't know who's going to do it. I think that, unfortunately, if Cowboys and Aliens is going to go the way that it looks like it's going to go, she may not have the star power that she would have had immediately following.
She doesn't have the credibility, I think. No, because the further point
we've right seen now. Her as the... The sort of ornamental
the damsel piece. In distress.
Well, she was an ornament in Tron Legacy, lounging on and a very fine looking ornament, I might add. but has anyone noticed like a little bit of crush on
like that?
Just like that. I haven't seen Cowboys and Aliens yet, but she is second fiddle to James Bond and Indiana Jones. So I don't, we haven't really seen what she's capable of yet.
Yeah, agreed. Although, if you're a watcher of House, you would have seen her over like 4 seasons.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And she was very good in House. So we have seen her act.
Not seen House, so no, I haven't seen her act.
Okay, well, I have. So I followed her all the way through. She's not in House anymore, but I followed her all the way through House. And she was actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move through this. Boy, we're running so late. Len Wiseman, director of the first Underground film. I think the first two Underground films, actually. Underworld. Underworld films. Yeah. He also directed Die Hard with a Vengeance. Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard, Die Hard 4.1. Mm-hmm. 4.0. God, facts are just wrong in every way.
Take time.
Live Free or Die Hard. Or in Australia, Die Hard 4.0. Yeah. Okay. All right. He's directing the remake of Total Recall, as we know. Mm. And he was actually at a Comic-Con panel this week answering some questions, right? Mm. He did confirm that they don't go to Mars. They're sticking to the original story. But most importantly, one question that was asked to him was, will the three-breasted woman appear in the new Total Recall? And he said yes. The three-breasted woman will be in Total Recall. So there you go. So we can all look forward to the three. He said there's actually a few correlations through the two versions, and you'll see a few things that you'll recognize.
I've heard Lindsay Lohan's been cast as the third breast.
The third breast. All right. Now, Lawrence Fishburne. Let's go into some superhero news and say Lawrence Fishburne has... Actually, before we do that, let's have a look at this. Let's have a look at this Roland Emmerich trailer. Okay. It's not in the show notes, so if I don't drop it now, we're going to miss it.
All right,
so we showed a trailer a few weeks ago for Roland Emmerich's new film called Anonymous, which is about the concept that Shakespeare didn't actually write any of his plays. Yeah. A new trailer showed up literally this morning. It's not even propagated out to a lot of sites yet. It's I think there's only like 13,000 hits on YouTube, so it's really hasn't... even really propagated that much out yet. Mm. We're going to show you right now. Here's the second trailer for Anonymous.
We all know William Shakespeare, the most famous author of all time. But what if I told you Shakespeare never wrote a single word? Thousand cells, all listening to the writings of one man, the ideas of one man. That's power, Robert!
Since when did words ever win a kingdom?
Leave that to me.
Plays are the work of the devil, born from a cesspool of plague and heresy.
In my world, one does not write plays.
William Shakespeare.
People like you do. Words will prevail with a listener.
He has done this for a purpose.
Will Shakespeare! Fraud! Charlatan!
He came to me, Ben.
He came to me.
None of your poems or your plays will ever carry your name.
Promise me you'll keep our secret safe.
Please tell me
Rhys Meyers isn't in this.
Sorry?
Is Rhys Meyers in this?
I actually don't know. I've missed the credits at the end.
I'm going to go have a look. Keep going.
Okay, I got to say, I'm intrigued by this film. Mm. If nothing else, I'm intrigued by this film because Roland Emmerich, it's so out of his wheelhouse that I've got to see it just because... Although I shouldn't say that because this is the man who did do The Patriot, which was also outside of his wheelhouse at that time, you know? And he sits there and goes, every now and again, he turns around and does something that's completely... not what Roland Emmerich does.
Yeah.
And it's like, I guess we got to congratulate him for that. Okay, let's move into superhero news. We'll give you more information about Anonymous when we find out more about Anonymous. Lawrence Fishburne has been cast as Perry White.
Hey.
And I should point out that Lawrence Fishburne is not the only very quote-unquote talented member of his family because his daughter, Montana Fishburne, is also kicking around as well because she's gone into hardcore porn. Disappointment.
What's her name again? Montana Fishburne.
Montana Fishburne.
Is that her stage name?
That's her real name, and that's the name she uses.
No, she's actually using that.
Yeah.
Excellent. So she's easy to Google.
Yeah, she's very easy. She's, where do you think I got that picture from?
Absolutely.
Okay, so here's Lawrence Fishburne, though. His dad. All right, dad has been cast as Perry White, and not even a wrinkle was raised on this news. I would have thought the fanboys out there would have gone, but you can't cast a black man as Perry White and blah blah. But no. Not a word was spoken. Everybody just went, yeah, cool.
It was like the Kingpin in the Daredevil movie. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
You know, I character was originally white. I didn't raise an eyebrow when Michael Clark Duncan...
No, because he had the physical presence.
He actually looked like the Thing,
right.
I thought, well, hell yeah, and he was probably one of the best things in the film.
Yeah. Oh. So Lawrence Fishburne, I think, has got the weight to play Perry White. I think it's going to be a very different Perry White than we've seen in the past. And I will say, though, that some of the oxygen was sucked out of the room, though, because this week they also announced that the new Spider-Man in Ultimate Spider-Man was going to be half black, half Hispanic.
Yeah, I read that.
And that's caused a whole bunch of ruffles. So,
why?
Well, because everybody's going, Spider-Man's white. You
fuck
can't
that.
Have, it's like... Peter Parker's dead. Deal with it. You know what I mean?
That's racism. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
It's like if you have an issue of the color of someone that they're going to put in a comic, racist.
Absolutely.
That's it. It's like anyone that's like, no, it's just a decision thing. It's like, no, these characters have been reinvented thousands of times.
And not only that, this is the Ultimates universe, which is their experimental playground. They can do whatever they want in that playground.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely. God, there's just so many reasons why I hate that sort of mentality. But anyway.
I think we should look at Montana one more time. What do you think? There you
go. Yeah. Okay. And bring up Olivia Wilde.
Olivia Wilde? Yeah, I can do that too. Hold on. There.
Thanks.
You guys done?
Yeah. Okay,
thank you. All right. Moving on.
The other big...
Stored away.
The other big, big, big news, and I got to say, both Richard and I, our sites were hammered yesterday because this little photo showed up. Which is Henry Cavill in his full Superman gear, and I was a little underwhelmed.
Yeah, I gotta say,
did you expect?
It's not the hero shot I wanted.
Well, no, I don't. It's not even the pose. I actually don't mind Henry Cavill. I think Henry Cavill looks fine.
Mm.
The fanboy in me says, first of all, where's the kiss curl? That's basically just a fanboy thing. But I actually really don't like all of the overhauling they keep doing to Superman's costume. No. I understand the overhauling to Batman's costume. I understand the overhauling to Green Lantern's costume because, like, Green Lantern's costume is an alien entity. Even in the comic books, they say, you know, it's hot to touch because it's not real and so forth. Batman, I can understand putting body armor into it and stuff like that, making it much more realistic. Superman's costume is just a symbol.
Yeah.
He could fly around naked and still be Superman. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, as being a symbol, the red and the blue and the yellow and everything is so ingrained into our psyche that I sit there and I look at it and go, why do we need to darken the blue?
Well,
at least they brought the cape back up, because if you remember Brian Singer's, he made the cape maroon, which I don't understand what that was all about at all. The red cape is so much of an emblem of Superman. And I hate this bullshit textured thing that they've put all over the costume again. And you sit there and go, what?
Because Superman's not buff at all in any way, shape, or form.
And they texture it all, make it all look kind of rubbery and all this. And you sit there and go, why? And the first argument everybody has is, well, you have to change it from the comic books because it doesn't work on the big screen.
No.
Well, Christopher Reeve made it work on the big screen. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry, man. Again, like, you know that I'm a fan of the removal of this old style of comic book because we've all kind of moved on and grown up.
But we don't have to.
No, we don't have to, but this is his envisaging of it. And to be honest, the reason that the costume's textured in my eyes is you're talking to a man who, like, apart from never being able to get a health insurance plan ever, probably gets into a lot of combat, and probably that stuff's made out of weave of some sort.
Yeah, but
kind.
You know, it doesn't have to be, because if you go by the lore of Superman,
yeah.
His costume is made of his baby blankets. They're Kryptonian material. They don't get destroyed.
Yeah, but you know? Who's to say it's not weaved? Instead of cotton cloth.
If that's baby blankets, that's going to be the most uncomfortable baby blankets in history.
You know what? Normally, Josh, I would agree with you 100%.
Oh.
But this is Superman.
Absolutely. And, that's my point.
And Superman is more of a symbol than Batman. He's
to who?
He's
not to me.
Not to you, but the
to
character
the legions
of
fans.
No, and
Superman.
That's fine. But,
no, but
again,
what I'm saying is the character of Superman has always appealed for a reason. He's better than us. Like, he's bigger than us.
Yeah.
And the thing that I loved about Bryan Singer's film were those scenes where he's hovering above the earth, looking down with a light behind him, and he's kind of like looking down going, I've got no connection to this planet almost, because frankly, I could wipe all those tiny people out if I had to.
Pretty irredeemable.
You know, absolutely. Yeah, well, like, I mean, he's obviously that doesn't happen in the film and doesn't say that in the film, but you get that impression he needs a connection to Earth to feel, you know, the whole father becomes the son, becomes the father thing. I actually like that. In Superman Returns, the only thing it was missing was a villain. Was a showdown with a main
and
villain.
A heart, yeah,
and a heart.
The film had no heart.
No,
beat,
so. there was definitely a distancing
it
film.
Had all the heart of an emo.
Now,
song.
I also have a problem with overanalyzing one frame of.
Agreed. I need to see more.
And this is what I mean.
It's
like
it's
I'm
like in action that might look awesome, but the thing is, Superman. I mean,
I like
actually
the
on
tougher Twitter. Envisaging. Like, my biggest problem is with the original concept and the Christopher Reeves and all this sort of stuff is. It just looks silly. Like, it just looks silly.
I'll disagree.
No, just in the films. Just in the films. If you want to go back to the comic books or whatever.
No, I completely disagree. I think Richard Donner's 1978 Superman makes it work.
Yeah.
Absolutely 100%.
It makes it work in the canon of its own period. It's like, I want to see a grittier Superman. I want to see him beat stuff up. I want to see him get fucking physical with some shit. And if I'm going to see that,
yeah, I want to
I'm
see that
happy.
Too, but I want to see him do that in his original costume.
I remember.
I think costume design argument, though, is such a... It's an irritating thing to me because it's like, until we've seen it in action, I don't believe in this whole kind of like debating on forums and stuff over the costume. It's like, when we see it and it's working... That's one thing. It's this exact same argument we had over Thor's costume. And it's like, it's silly, it's stupid, it's camp. Then we saw it in the film with all of its reimagined, you know, and the proper lighting and all this sort of stuff in scenes, and it didn't bother us. It's like, until it comes out, all we're talking about is one picture. It's like if somebody gave us a frame of a film and we tried to do a review on a frame of a film.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, yeah.
But still, they put this stuff out there because they want a fan reaction. They want us to get excited about
that's
it
right.
or whatever. And, you know, I'm still a little excited.
I'm excited. Look, I'm excited that we finally see an image of Superman. I'm just a little underwhelmed by the costume.
I'm not the world's greatest Zack Snyder fan after Sucker Punch. I will defend 300. I actually thought Dawn of the Dead was pretty good.
I'll defend Watchmen. I mean,
I will
defend Watchmen.
Watchmen is, yeah, exactly. I think given that it was a completely unfilmable comic, he did a reasonably good job of doing it. And when I first saw it, I was actually blown away from it. And my girlfriend Susan, who's a who hadn't read the comic book, and she was a non-comic book reader, actually really enjoyed the film for what it was.
We reviewed Watchmen on the show, and Jake, who was the co-host at that time, actually doesn't read comic books and never read Watchmen. He was so absolutely enamored with that film because, as he said, it is like a $200 million art film. You know?
I don't think it holds up on repeat viewings is my problem with it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I tried to watch
I've
it
actually
again,
figured out what it is, and it's since I've watched Sucker Punch is what I've realized my problem with the film is the fact that it lacks, it's pretty and the story's fine and he's got the attention to detail down to a ridiculously perfect level. But it's the heart that I'm missing a little.
You know what? And yeah, I agree with you. There's
and it's only on second viewing because the first time it's a Zack Snyder film. It's like, boom, and it just hits you. And there's
I actually kind of disagree with you because I've seen the film a few times and I've seen all the various different incarnations of it as well. I actually still get a kick out of it when I watch it. I'm a big Watchmen fan, and I think that he actually managed to do, as you said, he managed to pull off the impossible, which was he...
Absolutely. Even I'm not disagreeing with that. The man made the film that couldn't be made.
That Terry Gilliam failed to make, that all these other people couldn't
get
their hands
around. And I am not disagreeing with that at all. It's the fact that when I read, because I rewatched the film, and then I went back and read the comic book, and I'm like, there is a part of me that just connects with the comic. Mm. Like... feels the story right down to every detail, right down to the fact of the giant freaking creature in the middle of the city at the end of the thing. It's like, not a page do I turn away or even think about something being wrong with this film, but every time I watch the film, there's something missing. And I've never been able to let go of that feeling. And like I said, it is the best thing we ever would have got, and there is no way anyone will ever do it better. Mm. But there's just something missing.
There is.
And that's just, it's the only thing I can put it down to, is that there's a missing heart.
And I think when I wrote my, sorry to get off topic again, but when I wrote my Sucker Punch review, I said that Zack Snyder is one of these people who fundamentally understands what things are cool. He doesn't understand why they're cool.
Yeah. Mm.
And I, my concern with the Superman image, and I, again, it's way too early to make any judgments based on one frame, is that he gets the aesthetics of cool, and that he's built up this very cool-looking Superman costume, but fundamentally fails to understand. I'm hoping, you know, prove me wrong, Zach. But hopefully he doesn't fundamentally fail to understand why Superman is an important character. Why he is.
Well, I think James from Melbourne has just hammered a nail into this when he basically said Superman is universal, Batman is not.
Yep.
You know, and it's because Superman has such a broad fan base across the board. Batman doesn't. Batman's a much darker character. And Superman has that broad fan base because he just appeals. He's like this. Like this symbol. This it's like Captain America. We talk about Captain America being a flag.
I don't want to set anyone off with this. It's not an insult when I say this, but Batman is a thinking man's comic. Like literally, I mean, we're talking about a guy.
It's a detective story.
It's a detective story, and his characters are evil, like core evil, but they all have these sides to them, like Two-Face, like Catwoman. Like, all of these things have bad, and yet there's something else about them. So everything is this twisted balance system, whereas there is no twisted balance system.
No,
with
Superman deals with world-shattering problems.
Exactly.
You know?
I was going to say, read Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, and and his take on Superman and Batman's views on Superman in that. Really interesting
There's the line that he gives in that where he's like, he doesn't realize how.
Batman comics is where Batman continually has an internal monologue where he's saying, if one day Clark realizes how powerful he is, the world's in trouble. You know, and it's like, and he carries kryptonite around in his utility belt just in case, you know.
In the Frank Miller version, it's kind of like, you know, there is a scrap between Batman and Superman, and it is over. Superman being a government patsy, basically, or being a tool of, you know, the man, whereas Batman's always been kind of anti-establishment. But I think that's, I mean, look, Captain America worked because it trod that line between, it wasn't jingoistic, it wasn't overtly flag-waving, despite the fact that Captain America is
a walking flag.
Which
is an incredible feat. When you think about
and that's what I think was amazing about Captain America as a film, that it actually engaged me as a non-American to actually go, yay, I want to see this thing. Superman brings out those feelings, but as James from Melbourne said, universally. So hopefully Snyder can carry that over.
Look, I have hope. I also have a lot of faith in Christopher Nolan, who is producing the film. So hopefully Christopher Nolan keeps Zack Snyder in check. I have a lot of faith in David Goyer, who wrote it.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, I have a lot of faith in a lot of aspects of this. I just have this horrible feeling it's a train wreck about to happen. You know, it's like I'm kind of braced for impact.
A train wreck, you say? Sounds like a job for Superman.
There you go. Fix the track, Superman. Speaking of reveals this week, I woke up this morning and fire up my email, as I always do. I get newsletters and I go, oh, crap. And this photo surfaced, which is Anne Hathaway as Catwoman from the new Christopher Nolan Dark Knight Rises. This showed up today. Now, what do we think of this?
Yeah, I'll have one of those bikes.
Yeah. Okay, so for our audio listeners, it's Anne Hathaway in costume riding Batman's Batpod from the second film. And she's in she's wearing goggles with like little light-up bits, and she's in basically a black cat suit. My wife, without even a beat of hesitation, though, first thing she said is, where are the ears?
Yeah, well, this is the interesting thing, and again, it's coming back to that taking one cell out of what is essentially a whole movie. Yeah. There's 1,000 reasons she could not be wearing it. She might not have it at this stage. Maybe that's not the, said, it's not the direction they're going. Or maybe something massive has just happened and it got ripped off or something like that.
There's also one other factor here, which is what I wrote in the write-up, which is Nolan and Warner Brothers have both been very coy about actually using the word Catwoman.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever mentioned Catwoman.
No, I think you're right.
It's Kyle. She's been cast as Selina Kyle. The way through, they keep saying Selina Kyle. It's the fans who have immediately gone Selina Kyle / Catwoman.
Yeah, look.
And you know? So it could be an origin story. She might not become Catwoman until the very end of the film, all we know.
If we'd
know?
Seen stills from Batman Begins, which was... Bruce Wayne running around in cargo pants on rooftops. Like at the start of that film, he's got basically a balaclava. If we'd just seen those shots, we'd go, oh my God, what have they done to Batman?
Yeah.
You know, and this could be the same point in her origin
That's
story.
That's really well put. Yeah, no, I agree with that, man.
And look, we don't know, but this is another teaser image put out there to get us talking.
What I will say, though, is out of the Superman image and this image, this image gets me excited.
It does.
Favoritism.
Look, it is favoritism because, I mean, I think I've enjoyed the these films more.
Agreed.
Than
absolutely.
And I think Anne Hathaway's hot, quite frankly.
Look, the thing is, it's Anne Hathaway. She's hot. She's on.
Anne Hathaway, Olivia Wilde, Montana Fishburne. Are we actually seeing a theme here?
Look, she's hot. She's on a bike. She's in leathers, as far as I can tell. She's
tight leathers.
Tight leathers. Yeah. She's on a really big throbbing bicycle between her thighs. and she's wearing badass goggles. What part of that image is not meant to appeal to us?
It's hot, man. That's a great image. No, I love that image.
Yeah.
The Superman one underwhelmed me. That one I woke up to the morning, I went, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I showed it to my 12-year-old son. He went, oh, cool!
Actually, this brings up an interesting thing, and I don't want to get off topic again, but I will. there was the Superman image is a muscular man tearing a bank vault.
Vault off the wall.
There's just been this thing, and someone was writing this article online about this increasing trend with the male superhero characters and their abs and their six packs, and just really going for that female audience with it, because every bit of publicity from Thor to Green Lantern to Captain America has all been about women swooning over.
Would you mean that image?
That image, well, more when he's shirtless. I think the original
shirtless shot.
The original trailer had him running around in a towel, I think, at one point. Going, and then, you know, he puts the costume on. So,
as
Green
Lantern.
Isn't it? As Green Lantern. Yeah. So, no, but, you know, okay, and there's all this marketing around that, and whether or not this is actually going to be the final thing that actually convinces all of our partners that superhero films are cool as well, because there's good-looking men in it and not just women running around in spandex, which is why.
Although, that's why I go see it.
Yeah. No, which is why...
Let's talk Green Lantern, man.
We'll have it on a different level.
Let's talk Green Lantern for a minute, because I thought this was the most fascinating story of the week, which is that Warner Brothers has announced that it doesn't matter that it did bad box office. It doesn't matter that it only scored 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. They're moving ahead with the sequel.
Yep.
And their sequel is going to be darker and more gritty and so forth than the first one. It's like, what part of box office return to budget don't they understand at this point?
So the brown torch. So the darker and edgier version of the Green Lantern.
So we're actually seeing Green Lantern this week, and we'll be able to really talk about this.
How many months after the US?
I'm like hoping that I just like this more than everyone else, just so that I can be that guy. That's
expectations
just like,
can be lower. Couldn't
yeah, no, my expectations are so low that literally, if I see like two shots of the home planet and they're just decent, I'll be like, all right, cool, that was worth it. Yeah, and like I'll probably walk out of it going, it's a mess and it's chaotic and it doesn't do anything, but I've seen a lot worse. I've seen Life Force. So
Life Force is what we gauge it all to. look, I'm curious. I am very curious to actually see the film. I mean, it's been so long since it came out that I feel like we are so far behind on this one. I don't even know why we're so far behind on this one. But finally get to see it, we'll...
Just letting you know, by the way, I'm nicknaming you now off topic.
Really?
Yep. It's
okay.
Just officially now a statement. It'll be Richard off topic.
I'm sorry.
I think that's a positive thing. I didn't mean it negatively. I love the fact that they're going ahead with the second one. I think it's great. I think the fact that they're just pouring money into this, it's like, look, dude, we tried for years to get comic books out of rubble. Like, we've had Blades that were just... awful. We've had so many.
Last Ryan Reynolds appearance, which was as Deadpool.
Yeah.
Which was...
Oh, don't bring that up. That's bad wounds.
We won't go any further into that. But look, there's so many bad ones. And it's like, DC's learning.
Yeah, DC's getting back on
really
the
slowly. They're
yeah,
learning.
I know, but like we have to give them time. It's like these guys are the kids as opposed to what is the adult what, now
the
version.
Most interesting part of the entire Green Lantern equation was that, of course, DC and Warner Brothers are actually saying they're talking about a new Green Lantern film without Martin Campbell, the director.
Right, yeah.
Martin Campbell this week basically came out and said, I'm contracted to a sequel.
Mm, mm.
So they may not be able to get rid of Martin Campbell.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's going to be, I think there's going to be a shitstorm over who's going to direct number two.
Well, the other thing that I'm, that with this
or
one,
huge
sorry,
payouts.
I've just carefully though, with this next one, my actual biggest interest, because it's going to be the thing that matters when it comes down to it, is does Nikki like it? Because if Nikki likes it, there's an audience. You know what I mean? It's like if the kids get into it, there's the toys, there's the posters, there's the figurines,
well,
there's the games.
Well, we'll know because he's coming with us. So,
exactly.
So on Tuesday, he's coming with us.
Excellent.
So, we'll get a first-hand feeling on that one. And the last, I think, superhero piece of news. Yes, last superhero piece of news is that Marvel has talked about the fact that they want to move ahead with a Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not familiar with the Doctor Strange character, have a look at this.
Oh, come on.
Quality effects
in here.
Mm.
In its day,
this house is sealed against
you. It worked pretty
well. Your
right.
Stephen carried me across the seals. His aura protected me.
That's
pretty
awesome.
You have courage.
All right. Nice. That was from the 70s TV movie of Doctor Strange.
Which I have.
And I thought I'd just share a little bit of that with you. Dr. Stephen Strange, Master of the Mystic Arts.
Oh, yes.
Great character. I used to read the comic book a lot.
And I'm excited. I reckon we could make a fucking great film
absolutely. Out of this. Absolutely. And especially if Marvel's making it, means it fits within the canon of the Marvel universe that they are creating on film.
The thing that I've loved is he's always such an outsider anyway. Even when he was in the comics, like as, you know, sort of...
Well, he's the one that everybody goes to...
Yeah.
When thing goes weird. And, like, you've got to remember that this is, like, this guy delves into the one area that is literally something that can affect fucking Superman.
Yeah.
Like, this man became an integral part because there were things that Superman could not deal with.
No, no, wrong universe.
Oh, sorry.
Wrong universe.
What am I thinking of? No, I'm talking about, sorry.
No, the Avengers. The Avengers.
Civil War.
Civil War. They go to.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like his collaboration is sort of a.
He's an outsider. He doesn't work with a particular team. But whenever something really occultish happens, they will go. They will go to Strange's mansion.
Yeah,
in Manhattan.
So it becomes these really weird comic books, because every time they do and every time he becomes a part, it becomes a different experience, because it's like these are such grounded, you know, sort of like you've got your Batman, your world's so separate in this thing, and it's like his one is just so chaotic and different, and things just come out of nowhere that every time the characters are in his world, it's like
DC equivalent of him would be Zatanna. The latest series of Zatanna is actually really funny. I've really been enjoying the latest series
of
Zatanna.
Have they replaced Zatanna with... Is it the guy now?
No, it's still Zatanna.
It's still Zatanna.
But her brother is now in it, so there's actually two of them.
That's right.
But she's always fighting with him. But no, Zatanna's a lot of fun too. But also Dr. Fate. So you've got Dr. Fate and Zatanna. And
there's also Dr. Midnight, I think, as well, who does other things.
Yeah,
but
so...
But
Strange... In the Marvel world, I think is probably more powerful than all of them combined.
But you know how they never really go into that into too much depth. You know what I mean?
Like they do in his comic, though. If you read his, the Doctor Strange comic book, they go into some really weird, dark places.
But that's the thing, because he always brings surprise to the comics. Mm. Because it's like, you know, like massive demon pops up or whatever, and he's just like, boom, dead. And he's like, so what were we saying? And everybody's like, right. Anyway, I'm not going to ask how you did that.
And if they do that, they play a little bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
If they play it with that sort of sense of the unexpected to, you know, conjure another doctor. Not to get off topic, to conjure up another doctor, you know, the Doctor Who sort of series. If they had that kind of chaotic sense of adventure.
Yeah.
Just let's start running and see where we end up. Yeah. That so much the sort
running.
Of film.
Yeah, anyone who's ever in the stories is always the person that's in a world that they just do not understand. And that's what it's great. It's
and if like, they just go with it in that kind of fun fantasy way, awesome.
And I'm putting out a call to whoever it is that holds the rights, whichever TV company is that holds the rights to the Doctor Strange television movie. Put it out because it's the only copies that are kicking around are these bad VHS tapings off of TV that are so worn out because it's been 30-odd years since it was recorded that we really want to see it again. Bring it out on Blu-ray.
Do we really, though, Dave?
Oh, I do.
That clip alone has got me sold.
Yeah, that was actually his manservant. The actual guy who plays Doctor Strange looks like a porn star.
I love
He's got the 70s mo and the whole bit. It's classic.
Any character who's got a manservant is fine.
And John Mills adds a certain sense of class as Strange's mentor.
Nice.
So so you got a bit. We're running really late, so we're just going to jump straight into Andrew Nichol's last trailer, and then we're going to get into our last of fives, the list of five. The reason why I want to do this trailer is because this trailer's got me fascinated. Gattaca was one of those really frustrating films where I think it had brilliant ideas but was painfully slow. And but
I loved it.
Brilliant ideas, you know?
I loved it.
And once again, I think we've got the same concept here, which is brilliant ideas. One thing that Nichol does incredibly well is come up with concepts. Mm. And have a look at this.
Introduce my mother-in-law, Clara, my wife, Michelle, and my daughter, Sylvia.
Whoa, where's the rest?
Never met the quota.
My units are up from last week.
So is the quota.
Just once, I'd like to wake up with more time on my hand than hours in the day.
How old are you?
28.
I'm 105. The day comes when you've had enough. If you had as much time as I have, what would you do with it?
Sure as hell wouldn't waste it.
The last time anyone saw him alive, there was over a century on this clock.
Well, follow the time.
His name is Will Salas.
You can't hide 100 years in the ghetto.
You know that time will get you killed.
Hey, Mom, I'm gonna get out of here.
I just wouldn't know what to do if I lost you.
I don't believe we've had the pleasure of your company before, Mr.
Salas. Will Salas.
I'm sorry to have to break up the party, Mr. Weiss. I just need a word with your friend.
This is my death.
Please take me home.
Can't do that.
Why?
You're keeping me alive. This is my intention. Can you live with yourself watching people die right next to you?
You don't watch. You close your eyes.
I'm gonna make them pay. I'm gonna take them for everything they've got.
Come on, help yourselves.
Take the time, it's free.
You put enough time in the wrong hands, you upset the whole system. Let's hope so.
If this works, we gotta get more.
I can help you get all the time you want.
You know we're coming to get you.
All right, I'm intrigued.
Totally intrigued.
I think that's a really interesting concept. And now, don't get me wrong, Josh, as well. I actually really liked Gattaca. It's just that Gattaca is one of those really thoughtful, introspective films. And there's a lot of people who actually criticized it for being very, very slow in its pacing and so forth. I actually quite liked Gattaca.
I actually found that the pacing was one of its strengths. Like, there's so many scenes that are incredibly stretched out, and that's the reason they work. Like that scene where he's running with the fake heartbeat on, and it gives up like right as he's getting off. That scene is made up of the fact that it's like 2 or 3 minutes long as he's running along and almost dying as someone talks to him. And like, this was the great thing about it. It's like it had these great scenes to push energy back into it. Mm-hmm. And I accepted it for being long. But it's a bit like The American. Watch it at the wrong time.
That's true. Yeah. I also like to point out that that film has Olivia Wilde in it. So there's definitely a plus. Okay, let's get on to our list of five. We got to get through this. How much time do we have? Let's have a look here. Oh, we've got a few minutes. Let's see if we can kick through this relatively quickly.
Awesome.
Let's do it. All right,
let's do a power review.
I actually wrote down here. I said, this week's list of five great animal movies. This might be A Cute Kitten or Apes That Rule the Planet. Animals come in all shapes and sizes in cinema. List five great movies where the animal or animals are part of or all of the starring cast. Films can be animated or live action. Makes no difference. All right? So basically, we're not saying it was a great movie and the family had a dog. That's not an animal movie.
Oh, okay.
Unless a dog plays a significant part. Yeah. Anyway, all right, so let's get started. I'm going to start us off, and I'm going to say my number five is, my list is actually, I will point out, is an amalgam of my family. They were throwing stuff at me like that. Jurassic Park.
Of course.
1993 Steven Spielberg film. Come on, these are the biggest animals in the world. And they play a pretty significant part in that film.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a few scenes here and there.
Richard, number five.
Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Star Trek 4,
The Voyage Home. Captain, there be whales here.
Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home. Thank you. Said. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. There be whales. Gracie's pregnant. good choice. Actually, didn't even think of it.
No, it was sort of a last minute addition, but
very good choice.
You were very proud of that, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
I'm proud of him for that one. Yeah. Your number five.
My number five is a mess of a film. It's not good in any way. It's good in the same way Life Force is good. It's like you watch it and you're just like, how did you just fall so far away from what you were trying to accomplish?
I'm dying to know.
We have a lead character with incredible strength in being a lead role, which is Brendan Fraser.
My eyes are widening.
You may not have even seen it. It's called Monkey Bone.
I've seen Monkey Bone.
Oh, wow. That film. Like, I couldn't shake it. It came to my mind immediately, and I couldn't get it out. I was just like...
I rated it up there with Ed, with Joey Tribbiani. What's his name?
God. I just blanked out on his name.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, I didn't like Monkey Bone at all. But yeah, you're right, it's a mess.
It's like, go back and rewatch it, though, imagining that you're watching a really bad film. Like, don't go into it wanting something good. Go into it just going into it to see the chaotic, very unsatisfying version of what was early Tim Burton. It's like, it's mania, it's colorful.
Matt LeBlanc.
Oh, thank you.
There we go.
I was talking mom.
Just... out of chaos, and every time I watch it, I just have an absolute laugh riot at everyone involved,
right?
Not the actual film itself.
It's a very interesting choice,
yeah.
One I would ever have picked.
Yeah,
all right, my number four is Finding Nemo. It's fish. It's fish.
It was on my short list.
And fish, and they still somehow managed to make it really.
Just keep
sort of,
on swimming. Swimming.
I've got a lot of bad films on my list.
You're number four.
My number four is a film probably no one's ever seen called The Turin Horse. I saw it at Sydney Film Festival. It's a Hungarian film, so don't blame me for not seeing it. I put it on there, one, to be sort of an art house wanker.
You play that role well.
Yeah, thank you. that's my strength. this is going to make me sound even more. Now, am I pronouncing the philosopher's name right? Nietzsche?
Nietzsche. Yeah, I'm
anyway,
not sure.
You know who I'm talking about.
Well as any of us white people can pronounce it.
Exactly. It starts off with this, like, one frame on the screen talking about how Nietzsche whipped his horse and then instantly fell down in refusing to move after having whipped his horse, this classic tale. And then this movie just goes on to tell this really slow-moving black-and-white tale of this father and daughter living in this cabin in the middle of a sandstorm. It could be the apocalypse. It could just be the Hungarian countryside. We don't know. And they just live out this repetition all day long. And one of the things they do in there is checking the horse in in the barn. But they're like, just eat potatoes and this really slow.
Oh, those wacky Hungarians.
It is one of those movies you'll either love or hate because it's repetitive, but it's completely mesmerizing. But the horse is central to this story and central to the film.
Right.
And kind of you get the impression that the horse is sort of a, I don't know, I'm really going to sound like a wanker. The existence of the horse is kind of almost a metaphor for the longevity of humanity.
Oh my God! Save me from this wank, Josh.
No, dude, seriously, I'm intrigued.
It's also 3 hours.
Well, my title is the complete kryptonite to that.
Thank God.
And number four on my list, I have the absolute cinema gem, K9.
It's in my honor.
I know,
mentions.
Right? You can hate this film.
I love K9.
It's so bad.
Belushi.
Belushi. Yeah. Look at his sadist.
Like Belushi's the top level of your acting quality in this film.
The dog out acts Belushi 10 times over. It's the greatest German Shepherd ever put on film.
Oh, dude! It's the buddy cop movie from hell because it's like. Can you imagine?
And it came out the same year as Turner and Hooch. It was the better of the two dogs.
Oh, absolutely. Because it was like when I watched Turner and Hooch, I watched it after I'd watched K9. I'm like, you guys are just the pissy weak version of K9, man.
Oh, I love K9. No, I have nothing bad to say. It just didn't make my list. It actually almost was on my list at one point. So.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Good stuff.
Special.
My number three, I'm going old school. 1938 Howard Hawks films, Bringing Up Baby.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Quality film. Yeah. Cary Grant. Catherine Hepburn, enough said.
I didn't think of that, I'm kicking myself.
My wife's choice. My wife, one of her favorite films. And she just basically said, you gotta have Bringing Up Baby.
Yeah.
Baby, for those who don't know, is a big cat. Yeah. So it's a very big
Very
cat.
Big cat.
And it's really, really, really funny film. Okay, your number three, Richard.
Me. Going a little bit left field with this one, Alien. For two reasons.
Mr. Jones.
Jonesy. The
Jonesy,
cat.
Yeah.
Jones. I mean, again, central to the plot.
Absolutely.
It's kind of there's several characters snuff it because of the cat. And let's face it, the Ripley is not just the only survivor of the Nostromo.
That's true.
And Jones is in a sequel. So
nice. You decided to give him some screen time on live air.
What was that?
I really respect that you brought up the fact that this character was just completely
underappreciated. Yeah. Let's face it, Jones is the reason, spoilers for a film that's 30 odd years old, Jones is the reason why she has to go back into the ship.
Absolutely.
In the first Alien. She's ready to go.
Yeah.
And she has to go back.
And the other half of that is you could almost consider it an animal film because the alien itself is so
animalistic.
It's
an animal. Absolutely.
So, in as much
it's
as
a giant cockroach.
It's a giant cockroach. But no, I put it in there for Jones. So
yeah. Fantastic.
James
choice.
From Melbourne is saying that I'm a genius for K9. Yeah, calm down. All right. It's good. It's not that good.
You all sound like you're drowning.
Yeah.
What?
What?
Why are really? Anyway, it's because whatever. We are.
Yep.
The room is slowly filling up with water. That's why we have to be fast.
Yes, James, that was almost on my list as well, but we'll bring that up in a minute. All right, Josh, your number three. Number three.
Three is Outbreak.
Good choice.
Lucky films.
And dude, you all know that I am the bitter, husking, horrible person that loved to watch people die in large quantities, and there is no better film to watch that happen than Outbreak, where the entire country becomes completely under threat by something. So, yeah, no.
No, I love Outbreak, actually. You know what? I got to say this right in here. I'm going to say this on air, and it is minor spoilers for Outbreak, which is a film that is 15 years old. It came out in 95, right? Yeah, 95. Mm. I love that entire film except for one line of dialogue.
What?
There's one line of dialogue in that film that is so clunky and doesn't work.
I think it's the one I usually cheer at from my popcorn.
It's the one right near the end of the film where Donald Sutherland says, Billy, are you stupid or something? And it just doesn't feel real at all. In a film that the dialogue is actually pretty good in, this one line, this clunky line out of nowhere. He's a general.
Yeah.
He's not going to say, Billy, do you feel, are you stupid or something?
Well, speaking of great lines, Outbreak gave one of the greatest lines out of Chasing Amy, which was in reference, it says Jason, God, what's his name? You're not Jason Mewes. Banky, plays Banky.
Jason
Lee.
Jason Lee has one of the greatest lines in that film, which is, that chick could be a bigger germ farm from the monkey than the monkey from Outbreak. So, hey, all that. I've just got a text from my girlfriend Susan who says the Spanish movie Bon Bon El Perro, which is about a dog, is also a very good film. So just want to
thank you, Susan.
Out.
I haven't seen it. All right, my number two, Jaws.
Nice.
As a great big shark. And a great big shark is a pretty pivotal character.
Well, it's number two on my list as well.
Hey, so. There you go. Dum, 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 dum.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Jaws still goes down as probably one of my favorite films
goes
of all
down.
Time.
It's almost.
Great, great, great film.
Oh, look, it's, you know, it was almost number one on my list. And
almost. I think my number one is more important than that.
Your number one's pretty good, actually. yeah, no, look, Jaws got everything. I mean, again, animals in the title.
So, absolutely.
And it's a suspense slash horror film.
I think it's also interesting that I've got two Steven Spielberg films on my list.
Yeah, no.
All right, you're number two. Your Jaws, you're number two.
Yeah. My number two is...
Just to clarify, Mike from Canada,
yeah.
Richards is Jaws as well.
Mm. Yes, no, Jaws 2. No, it would be Jaws 4, the one with Michael Caine. Yeah,
all right, number two for Josh.
Yes, thank you. My number two is a film before Val Kilmer got pudgy. Mm. It's a film called Ghosts in the Darkness.
Oh, good film.
Which is a great film to start with. It also has him and Michael Douglas before they both got pudgy.
Yep.
And then on top of that, it's just a really interesting story. Like it's you've got these almost horror-esque characters, which are really just normal animals. And it's just the fact that they are just... so incredibly detrimental to the environment of what's happening.
It's a really good film. I was very surprised when I saw Ghost in the Dark. I saw it at the cinema. And I remember watching it going, oh, this is just going to be a big cat movie, blah, blah, blah. But it's a really good film. It's really well done.
And it's about the shot work. Like, it's all about these really clever shot work and really clever dialogue. It's like, that's what holds you through the film. It's like, essentially, there's a lot of stalking and a lot of, you know, sort of nothing happening. And then, you know, it's like, it is. It's like a horror because it's like these things just come out of nowhere and massacre people.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the story of the guys trying to find it. It's just really cool.
Sorry, I just had a flash of Monty Python. A tiger? He seems to have lost his leg. All right, my number one, 1950. Mm. I love it because it's about a great big animal that we never actually see. Mm. And that's got to be Harvey.
No.
So Harvey is a 6-foot-tall rabbit. Which we never see. I've brought Harvey up on a list before. I love Harvey. It's a charming, brilliant, wonderful film.
If you haven't seen it, go watch it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Get someone you love there with you because you'll both hug afterwards.
Yeah, it's just charming. Yeah. It's just one of those films where it's just charming. There's no other word that can describe this film. You know?
It should have its own classification, C for charming.
C for charming, absolutely.
Like, it's not even G for general. It's C for charming. It's just like it's its own class entirely of film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Excellent.
You're number one.
It almost
went on my list, you know.
It's
That's what
okay. The Lion King. I saw this again very recently with David.
Yep.
It's being re-released in Australia next month in 3D, no less.
Yeah.
And it's getting a Blu-ray release in October. So, but look, you know,
it's a great film.
Having watched this again so recently it's been. How many years?
7 years.
It's been 17 years, isn't it?
So for cinema, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, from cinema, yeah.
So it's cinema.
Yeah. It's been 7 years since its last disc release.
That's right. 7 years since last disc release, but 17 years or something since it'd been at the cinema. Still an amazing achievement. Still amazing animation. And
I actually have in my honorary mentions and just about any Disney cartoon.
Well, that's the thing.
I just kind of summed them up. Because
I want to say I'm Disney's bitch, and I could have filled this thing with Disney films. And
I almost the other one that almost made the list, I got to say right now, was very, very close, was Dumbo. I'm a huge fan of Dumbo.
It's very close to the top of my
That's why I decided to summarize the Disney films, because I just thought this
Dumbo
too many.
Is an almost perfect film. It's only an hour long. And the main character doesn't speak at all through it. So,
yeah, it's fantastic.
And that's just pure animal gestures that the Disney people just got so well through countless hours of observation.
And the crows are brilliant.
Slightly racist, but brilliant.
Oh, who cares? You know? They were brilliant. It was a sign of their time.
Absolutely.
Josh, hit us with it. What have you got for number one?
Jumanji.
Oh, good choice.
Yes. Yep, it has to be on my list. Number one film about animals because it's just... chaos.
Absolutely.
And has Robin Williams before he went crazy.
Really? Yeah. There was a time before he went crazy?
Well, I mean, when he was still able to, before he, you know, kind of went off the rails entirely, like back when he was
before
still
fun. Got that really big sort of survivalist beard.
That was actually, fun fact, that was actually just him showing up to set one day and they were like, you know what, let's use that.
Yeah.
Because he just showed up after
a
weekend.
He's a very hairy man.
Yeah, yeah. He just went out for a weekend. I didn't even drink. Really? No, true story. Dude just didn't drink and just woke up.
James in Melbourne would like to say, the Lion King, Richard, that is you all lose false, by two the masculinity way. Points.
Lies!
I disagree with you completely, James.
It's Hamlet,
the
man.
True sign of a man.
It's a great film.
The true sign of a man is being able to stand up and look Scar in the face I've and had, not be terrified.
I've had a Lilo and Stitch notepad sitting here in front of me direct to camera for the last 4 hours. I don't think I've made any great claims to masculinity.
Okay. That's it. That's a list.
It. That's all done. Right.
Throw a couple of honorary mentions out there very quickly. I had as honorary mentions Seabiscuit, K-9, Babe, Charlotte's Web, the live-action version, Ratatouille, The Bear, the French film The Bear.
Oh, The Bear, yeah, the French film.
Gorillas in the Mist. Oh, I wrote course. Gorillas in the Bear. Just how tired I was when I wrote this.
That sounds like a gay porn film.
Gorillas in the Mist, Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, and just about any Disney cartoon.
Absolutely. I'll agree with you on the last one. I also had King Kong in there.
Oh, of course.
Absolutely, yeah. One in there for Susan.
And it's so funny because I was actually thinking of ape movies.
Yeah, I know.
Mighty Joe Young. There's another
Mighty
one.
Joe Young.
The original. Black
the original
and white.
One. Yeah, absolutely. I was going to put in the original Planet of the Apes as well, but I thought that was too obvious. One for Susan, The Cat from Outer Space, Dumbo, which we've already mentioned. I had to throw in a Studio Ghibli one, so My Neighbor Totoro. Mm-hmm. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? I actually one more off the wall, Grizzly Man documentary.
Oh, yes. That's the one where the guy finally got eaten, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. For James from Canada, For Mike from Canada, of course, the honorary mentions don't count towards vaulting. They're just throwaways at the end. They're the discards as we weed our lists down. Is the way we look at it. All right, let's get out of here. We've been doing this show for an awfully long time.
7 hours.
7 hours. If you agree or disagree with anything we had to say today, this is day 5 of the Film Action Podcast. No, if you agree or disagree with anything we had to say today or would like to send us information or anything like that, you just go and send it to feedback@filmactually.com. And I can't get my notes happening properly here. There we go. Or you can send us voicemail 0280113167. And as I've said many times before, if you are outside of Sydney or you just don't want to spend the money for a long distance call, you can always just Skype us. Skype ID is Geek Actually, all one word. Follow us on Twitter, join our Facebook page, all this good stuff that's out there, buy merchandise, everything. Just go to geekactually.com. There's a big follow us link. You'll find everything. And one last reminder that you can watch us record this show and our other show, the Geek Actually Podcast. You can watch us do these things live every Saturday, Australian Eastern Standard Time, which is UTC plus 10. We start roughly around the 12 p.m.-ish mark every Saturday, and we have a lot of fun. So come and join our chat room, and you can join in with all these crazy people who are in our chat room with us as well. Josh, where can people find more about you?
RoyLC.com is a gaming website. Head over there, check it out. It is awesome.
Fantastic. That's it. Richard, where can people find more about you?
You can find me on the freshly redesigned TheRealBits.com. That's R-E-E-L. We're a film.
Which, for those who are wondering because of earlier in the show, is back up.
I'm back online now. And I'll have to talk to David about some Site 5 thing at the end of this. You can find me on DVDBits.com or just on Twitter at DVDBits.
Very good. Okay, we also have a couple of friends that we want to do quick shout-outs to because we're running late. First of all, Real Junkies Podcast, R-E-E-L Junkies Podcast. They are a movie podcast like us, but they like to drink tequila. You can find them over at weekendronan.com or find them on iTunes. Also, our voicemail earlier was from Charlie Gonzalez. That is, of course, Charlie from reboundradio.com, and they have their podcast out, Good Day, Sir, which I love that name. I got to tell you, I just love that name. And we want to also quick shout out to our very, very good friend, Josh Spencer, who did our cartoon artwork for our site and our cover arts, and you'll find him at attackninja.blogspot.com.
Nice.
Which is also one of the best domains ever written. Now, we are going to finish on, I did say that the opening clip was from Planet of the Apes. I said, you're all going to recognize it, but did I ever actually identify it? I didn't need to. I didn't. Okay, 1968's Planet of the Apes. Okay, now we are closing the show today with a track called The Apes Attack from The Rise of the Planet of the Apes soundtrack by Patrick Doyle. You would think, do they? So the soundtrack is by Patrick Doyle. If you like the soundtrack, go buy it on iTunes or Amazon or other places music is sold. We always like to finish off with a piece of soundtrack music. I think that's it. I think we're done.
Oh, my God.
Done. Whew. Getting out of here.
They said it would never happen.
Before we go, hold on. Olivia Wilde.
Very nice.
Okay, okay.
And
now
we're done.
Now we're done. So we're going to say thank you very much to you two.
Thank you
very much, chat room. Thank you much for listening. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye now.